Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hey, hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic, as it usually is. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to be here, too.
I didn't wear a jacket when I came today. On my arrival, or when I left the house, it's like, huh, I don't have to wear a jacket.
It's like it's almost summer.
It was super warm.
Yeah.
And I do have a jacket in the car for the drive home. I assume it's going to drop off. But yeah, it was so warm. It was so nice.
It's the start.
I know.
Even up north, they're saying the rain and some
warmth. Yes. Yeah. So they were talking about Lake of Two Rivers. The inflow and outflow is high enough from the heavy rains that we've been getting that starting to melt the inflow and outflow of Lake of Two Rivers. What is it? Cache Lake? Or one of the lakes they're saying has 18 inches, but it's going to start to...
It's going to go fast.
Do you know that stick-like crystallized ice when it starts to rot or starts to soften? So I look forward to those times because it's fun breaking up ice when it goes into those little pencils of ice. Kind of neat.
That's your hobby.
It's nice. It's nice. Fun. Makes it's that tinkling
satisfying.
Sound when you scoop them up and throw them across the surface of the ice and makes all those tinkling noises.
It's like those videos online that's the most satisfying sound.
Yeah.
You just watch those on stuff, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
ASMR.
I knew it.
Yeah, I love it.
We've had glitches.
Yes.
Glitches upon glitches upon... I hate technology. Absolutely hate it.
As much as you use it.
Yeah. Last week... Now, I will say it's been up and running for 10 years.
Yeah. So it was
due for a glitch. Last week we had a glitch where something happened. People couldn't access the podcast. We got that glitch fixed. Apparently,
it cascaded into another glitch.
In fact, that glitch cascaded into a second glitch, which cascaded into a third glitch, which cascaded into multiple swear words.
It was a really old website.
Well,
old software.
The problem is we put auto update. So when new updates of the back end stuff came out, it would auto update. And it was saying it auto updated. So we go in. It was just telling us it auto updated.
It didn't
actually auto update anything. So this has been, it gets to a point where my thing is when we started with computers, we had Windows 3.1. And then it would be saying, okay, now you're 3.1.1, you're Windows 98, XP, 2000. When realistically, you're still on 3.1. So then all of a sudden,
updated.
Nothing's running because you need XP 2000, right?
Windows 11.
Windows whatever it is these days. And that caused a problem. And so it's, okay, well, we'll update that, which caused another problem. Well, we got to update this, and then everything just went hamster Huey and the ooey kablooey. So, needless to say,
hey, exciting news! We have a new website.
We are in the process of putting together our new. It is mostly up there with a couple
and
of tweaks and stuff. So,
do we know if the next this upload is going to work,
or
do we find out Thursday morning?
If you are listening to this week's podcast
Thursday.
I would assume things went smoothly.
Yes. You'll know before we do.
I expect a few bumps along the way. Because this is like totally... Because I totally made that last website from a crappy little theme.
And we also don't know if it's going to upload automatically to like Apple Podcasts.
And see, that's the bump I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
Thursday, if everything works out right. Because there was a couple of them... that weren't finding it. And there's other ones like Spotify. Yeah, it's still playing everything fine and whatnot. So we'll find out come Thursday. Did I say I hate technology? Do you remember I gave that speech at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure, that presentation about leaving technology at home?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Leave it at home! In a basement, in a corner, behind the furnace,
cage.
Buried.
Yeah.
You know when you have that crack in your foundation in the basement and the water's pouring in?
Oh.
Put the technology there to help plug that hole.
There you go.
Anyway, thanks for everyone for your patience, and hopefully things go smoothly this week, and you guys are actually listening to this on the day, and I'm not getting 100 emails. And thank you very much for everybody sending me the emails, messages, and stuff saying,
hey,
just so you know, why am I getting so many emails today? This is great. People love us. Oh, no, they don't.
They're complaining.
They're complaining. You people, all you do is complain. You only send me love messages when
it was good.
When it's dead.
It was good that people reached out because we don't listen to the podcast because we create it.
We have.
So we wouldn't have known.
Yeah, there's certain people that listen to it first thing in the Thursday morning.
Yep.
And they're like on that like white on rice and ghost hand and a snowstorm with a polar bear.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, they're on that right away. So, which is nice. So if anything does happen, then
we'll see.
So, yeah. So new websites, I think about three quarters up.
Yes.
There's some tweaking I still have to do and a couple things with
it. If
you try to join our email list. No, we don't have one.
Yeah.
There's all these little things on the template that you have to figure out how to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
There is the big donate page.
Oh, yes.
Which I got rid of the donate page because you can send us money if you want, but I'm not having that on a website.
No.
I mean, back when we first started, that was a thing. Pay for your websites or your podcast.
Yeah.
And the fact that we've been free since day one.
We have. We have not. We started with like even fake advertisers, like who was it? Algonquin Outfitters.
They weren't fake.
Well, they never paid us.
Well, they gave us some free stuff once in a blue moon. But yeah, no, okay, I understand. Yeah, fake.
Yeah,
fake. But they are a real business.
Yes,
they do.
They
sell
just didn't
stuff.
Pay us for it.
Yeah, they owe us about $5,000 now.
Exactly.
No, we put it just to advertise people out there to
helping it
to help out and whatnot
and make us look more legitimate,
make us look more professional. We may not be professional, but we play one on the podcast. Not even. This is our hobby, bubby.
Yeah.
So we went for a tour this weekend, Saturday.
We did.
And I'm going to start with the fun part first, the way home.
Oh, yes.
Derek has been talking about this brewery for ages.
Yes.
But every time I said, did you go? Well, they're closed on Mondays. They're closed on Tuesdays.
They
close on any day that ends in a Y.
They close at 3 on a Wednesday. Or they open for the week at 3 p.m. on a Wednesday. I'm not running around then. And every time I try to pick some up on the way here to record on Tuesdays, it's like, oh, no, they're not open.
Uh-huh.
So I've been in their parking lot three different times when they've been closed.
So on the way home, I said, hey, why don't we go check out Sir Monty's?
Yes.
Which we've talked about before. So we did.
And they were open.
And they were open.
Friendly people. Oh, my God.
Oh,
they were
very
so friendly.
Nice people. We bought beers.
I think
beers.
We were there for like 40 minutes.
It had to be at least just chit-chatting with them.
Chatting with them.
There's only a few people in there, but.
Yeah.
So, Sir Monty's used to be a strip joint called Tanglewood.
The Tanglewood.
And it was converted into a brewery.
Yes.
And tonight, we are drinking the Tanglewood IPA. Tanglewood IPA paying homage to our location's history. Tribute to the spirit of craftsmanship and tradition. The Tanglewood IPA captures the rugged beauty of its origins in every sip. I don't know if they're talking about the beer or the strip club. We got such a history.
Oh,
Durham region and Toronto strip club history that we really... how does anybody know that many strip clubs?
I know. These guys knew their stuff.
Right? Which, I don't know if we should be applauding or scared.
or concerned.
Really, really nice people, though, went in there. So we actually, finally got the chance to stop in there. And now we've got a beer fridge filled with Sir Monty's beverages.
Yes.
And we're drinking out of our Sir Monty's glasses.
And this is an IPA. It's very good.
Yeah.
And we're excited. We finally have some. Like, we've been talking for over 6 months about this place.
I've been waiting for beer from this place because, you know, you keep talking about it.
I keep talking about it.
So, yeah, sometimes you just got to take the bull by the horns and say, we're going to Sir Monty's because they're open today.
Yes. And they were.
I don't care that your whole family's waiting on dinner for you.
Yes. It worked out.
It worked out. So now we finally got in there, saw some stuff, found some history about the building, too. There was a knight at the front.
Yes.
And that had a shield and sword, which kept getting stolen.
Yes.
And the knight went to Ottawa somewhere. And there was a guy who, as a teenager, him and his buddy stole one of the swords and
soul swords, and stole shields, a cape. Yeah.
And he brought them back when it became a brewery.
Yeah.
So they were sitting over in the corner there. And now... I said, well, if he's willing to do that, he should have got his same buddies together. You give them each a case of beer, tell them to go to Ottawa and steal the knight back.
Yes, exactly.
Then you got it all back here again.
But if, not that Google, so what is it? Google Street View. Google Street View doesn't go back far enough. Because 2009 was when it first started. But unfortunately, you can't see the gigantic statue that used to be in their parking lot. It was basically a Pegasus with a knight on it and a shield and helmet and a sword. And so this was like, I remember back in the day, driving back and forth.
I bet you do.
I've never been there. This is the first time I've actually been in that building.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more, say no more. In case Siobhan's listening. Never been there before. Don't know what you're talking about. What's a strip club?
I don't know what that is. Anyway, they used to have a big statue in the parking lot, and it was, I would say, not famous, but infamous.
Well, this parts of it was stolen, he said, 4 times.
Yeah, memorabilia. Some of it came back, like, whatever. But it's quite the history. It's very neat. Mm-hmm. And it's a big glass bubble where they make the beer, so it's separated from the patrons. But it's now, they get, they don't make their own food. They get it from upstairs in the restaurant. There's a restaurant upstairs. Yeah, so you can eat there, you can drink beer there, and so on. And it was interesting, him describing the history and what they did and how they did it. And and all the secret entrances and hallways and caged areas. If there's a fight, the server can hide behind the lot cage. And
there was a door under the stairs.
That went up down the hallway.
Yeah, in the hallway. Right, so if there was a fight,
there was a caged area the woman could, or the server could hide behind and locked.
Oh, no, that was under the stairs. Came.
Was it behind
the stairs? Yeah, it was under the stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a door under the stairs where she would grab the cash, run and lock the steel door under the stairs until the police came while everybody was out there fighting.
He said they only had patio furniture because it wouldn't break during
plastic
the fights.
Plastic patio furniture because the fights broke out.
So it's like, you guys had that many fights? He says, oh, yeah.
Wow.
So he was remembering back to a time when he was a patron, and I don't know, was he the new owner or was he... Just a server.
I think he was just a patron at the time.
Yeah. No, I mean now.
Now? Oh, I think he's the owner.
You think he's the owner?
Yeah.
He seemed to have an awful lot of knowledge about all the memorabilia that was coming back from people from all over Canada type thing.
I remember back in the day when it was Wednesday wrestling and stripper night.
Yes.
People over there getting into fist fights while the strippers were on stage.
It's interesting that you just buy patio furniture. It's like, hey, it doesn't break when they've smashed it over your kids' heads.
Smarticle particles.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about that.
Enough about that. This is a family
show. If you want to go there and get some story, don't take the kids. They got stories.
Yeah. Yeah. We were there for like 40 minutes.
Lots of laughs, though.
Lots of laughs. We were starting to draw a crowd from all the stories.
Well, there's even some other patrons there joining in the comments. I remember that. Okie doke. How long have you been here, sir? I think you had enough.
Yeah. Quite the place.
So before that.
Yes. To start that Saturday.
We made the trip up to the Canadian Canoe Museum in Peterborough to attend the second annual Backcountry Canoe Symposium. Bah-bah! We missed last year because we were slow on the draw for tickets.
I didn't know about it. Yeah.
We'll get tickets. And then next thing,
it's sold out.
Sold out pretty early last year too. So, Evan Holt, also known as Traversing, you can find him at traversing.ca, ran the first symposium last year to fill the gap that was left between the Kitchener-Waterloo Canoe Symposium when that one ended. There hasn't been anything for a few years, so he finally just said, you know what, well, why don't we do one here at the Canoe Museum?
It's brilliant. That's a good place to do it.
It is. So, yeah, he put everything together, and the symposium is run in conjunction with the Canadian Canoe Museum as well. So we bought our tickets. You get a raffle ticket. You get admission to the museum. You get into the see the presenters and all that sort of stuff at the symposium. So good bit. Good day up there.
It was very well organized, very well run. I wish I'd seen it the first year, but it was it's like he's been doing it for 10 years. Came off really well. It was very professionally done.
Yeah.
It was just a good time, and there's four different groups of speakers and different videos and stuff. It went really well. It was awesome. Yeah.
I like the fact that Evan gets his wife Julie and their son to
they're involved.
Involved as well. They make it like a family thing, which is pretty cool. They get all the raffle tickets and their son picks them out, and he's I think 6. And he reads the numbers.
And he reads jokes.
And he reads jokes between each presenter. And then he hands them out the prizes and stuff like that. So we got up there a bit early, walked around the grounds to check out the lake and stuff like that, which is ice-free.
Yes.
They don't have the docks in yet. They're floating just offshore.
Yes. But
they're not actually connected.
Yeah.
Went inside to check out the vendors they had there and whatnot. Badger Paddle, Friends of Tamakami, Friends of Wabakimi, Organic Boat Shop.
Yep.
That is there. Halliburton Paddle Shop and Swift Canoes. After chatting with them for a bit, we headed upstairs, grabbed our seats to see the presenters. Kevin Callan sat between us. You would think he would know better by now. chatted with some people we know that showed up to see it as well, which was nice to catch up with them. Majority consensus is that summer can't get here.
It was a little chilly that day.
It was a bit chilly that day, but, you know, like I say, everybody's can't wait to get on the water and summer be on its way. The presenters, like you say, there was 4 presenters. 5, because one was a couple. Eric Drost and Hillary Croft, Tailwinds North YouTube channel. Their presentation was Big Lake Paddling on Great Slave Lake Northwest Territories. And we talked about that because Jack Pine Paddle up there is the ones that do the sea kayaking trips up there.
And 2 seasons of Alone were done
up on Great Slave.
On Great Slave Lake.
I enjoyed it because, like I say, most people that head to the Yukon or Northwest Territories, they tend to do the big river trips. And you don't get as many doing just one lake, especially a massive lake like Great Slave Lake. You know, you're seeing all these river trips going.
Yeah.
But no one really shows you the, like, you can fly into Yellowknife and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think more people need to do that sort of thing.
I tell you, their presentation really sold me on it. I definitely want to get up there with my family on Great Slave Lake. And
with a fishing rod? Do you see the size of those lake trout?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, he was catching some.
Size of a small kid.
They were big fish.
Yeah. That was a good presentation. I like that. It was a bit different than, like I say, you usually see the big river trips and the rapids and all that sort of stuff. So it was nice to see that. If you're not into rapids and all that sort of stuff, there is stuff for you guys to do up there. You know, you can go on these trips like that.
And there was realism. Some wind. Yeah, so I was just going to talk about that, the wind. So there's a bit of realism to their thing, too, because it wasn't just all fun and games. It was, it's a big lake. So as you can expect, just like Superior, when the wind picks up, it has a long run across that lake. So it's going to get choppy. And they got wind bounce several times on their trip. So.
And you could put the CN Tower on the bottom of the lake.
Yes.
And there was still
no idea it was that deep.
Yeah, it's deep.
It's 2,020 feet deep, I think. I can't remember, but it was over 2,000 feet.
It was a lot of Ben Beauchamp's deep.
It was that CN Tower is 508 meters, so times 3. So it's CN Tower sits at the deepest part, and there's lots of room above it.
Plenty of space above it. Katrina Van Osch, Her presentation was going back to the backcountry, answering the call of nature. She talked about canoe tripping for years and then stopped for about a decade. And she said, I don't know why she stopped. We just stopped.
Yeah, she doesn't know why. She's just... Yeah.
And then getting back into it. So that was answering nature's call and getting back out there. I think a lot more people need to do that. And it happens. Life gets in the way. Yep. And then you just, I'll put that on the back burner. I'll get back to that. And then next thing you know, because a decade's gone.
It happens. People's lives get busy. I can understand that. She doesn't know why it happened, and I think that's with a lot of people. When you have something that you really love, and for some reason, like, hey, how come we haven't done that in like 5 years type thing, right?
Yeah.
So it happens. You get distracted by life. Life gets busy. You're growing. You have kids. You have this, that, the other thing. So I get it, and I think it's amazing. She described how she got back into it, and she ran through all that whole thing. It was really engaging the way she talked about it and what she got out of it.
And she used to work with Kevin Callan.
Yes.
So, I think more people need to get back out there. Because you know what? Like, you sit there thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going out on a hike every couple weeks or something like that, you know, through our nature trails or whatever. That's not really enough.
No.
And that just tied you over.
And so what Katrina was talking about is it's the backcountry part of it. Mm-hmm. And to actually get out there, and she does a lot of solo. And her whole presentation really got me thinking. It's like, I really need to start doing some solo trips again. I haven't done that since before I got married. And I think I've, in the last 10, 15 years, I've done one solo trip.
Really?
Yeah.
I've done a bunch of them.
Like, I've done the group of six people that are all solo with you. It's the
Sean
Rowley solo weekend.
Yeah, my solo weekend.
Yeah, so everybody paddles solo, but you're all in the same campsite on your backcountry. But it's like, I kind of forgot what it was like just to not have to ask somebody, hey, do you want to do this? Or, hey, do you want to paddle there? Or, hey, can we drop a hook and see if we can catch some fish? Or, hey, what do you think about us doing this? Or, hey, who's going to do the dishes? Or, hey, who's going to start the fire? It's like, you just do it all yourself, and it's just peace and quiet, no voices.
Well, the real problem is if you are on a solo trip by yourself and you start asking those questions and somebody answers.
Yes. Whoa.
Wait a minute, when did you get here? Next one, we did the lunch and then came back after lunch.
Yep.
Ben Beauchamp, he's a YouTuber. He's talked about being outdoors and told stories from his past paddling trips and stuff. Some good stories about trips with friends and family and just being out there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's his whole thing. Just get out there and be in nature and learn from it and just keep doing it. Keep doing it. Go, go, go.
I got to admit, everybody was like, oh, Ben Beauchamp this and Ben Beauchamp that. And he was a presenter and everybody was talking about him. It's like, who's Ben Beauchamp? I've never heard of him until the symposium. So now I have to Google the guy.
Yeah. Young guy. Yeah. He's got this big mustache too, right?
I love it.
So I looked at him. I said, so when are you going to make the jump? And I just stroked my beard. when are you going to go all in? So, yeah, nice guy. And then Kirsten Graham May, we know her as the Turtle Lady.
she doesn't mind being called that.
You know what? Lady. Considering why she gets called that, I don't think she would.
No.
We had Kirsten on episode 226. Good episode if you want to go listen to that one. She talked about being a volunteer first responder with the Ontario Turtle Conservation Center. So that's pretty cool chatting with that. But her presentation was backcountry company, not so solo paddling adventures, which brings to mind my solo trip with six people.
Yeah.
You know, when Scott Robinson and I went up to up the Moose River, when we got back, the number of people that said, I would have gone with you guys.
Yeah.
I would have had 40 canoes following exactly. me up that river.
Yeah. This is not what I envisioned.
Yeah, we're going to need another train to take everybody back to Cochrane.
Had a car.
Yeah. How was your solo trip? Really crowded. But yeah, that's just getting out there with people and you know. I love paddling a solo canoe when I'm in a group of people.
Yeah.
You know, so, and like you say, it's you can just go wherever you want. If you want to go out early, you know. Like, I know when I go with people, if there's two of us in the boat, if I want to get out for an early morning fish, hey, I'm going fishing. You want to come? No. Or, why didn't you wake me? I would have gone with you.
Yeah.
Or, well, you got your own boat, call yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's up to you.
So.
I'm not your supervisor.
Right. Enjoyed the speakers and their presentations. It was really nice to get up there and see it. And
it was nicely
really well
done. Very nicely done.
Over lunch break, I took the time to go wander through the museum, check out some exhibits for the fifth time. That was my fifth time since it's been open being up there.
I've been to the current building, I think, three times. The old building twice, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've been there a lot of times. We saw Carolyn Hislop.
Yes, we did. She remembered us.
She was our very first guest,
yep.
Episode one, followed by Kevin Callan.
Yes.
Talked to her, and she said, yeah, 10 years now, and we just put out episode 529 last week. And she was just, like, dumbfounded. Like,
yeah.
That long?
Yeah.
I didn't make any "we're all getting old" jokes.
We're too stupid to quit.
Right? We got nothing better to do. Keeps me out of jail.
Exactly.
So, yeah, she's just like, wow. So I said, we need to come back and do another interview.
And
here.
She was all for it.
And she's all for it. And she says, when we have an artist in residence,
oh.
So somebody that's doing
yep.
building a canoe or something like that,
mm-hmm.
come up and do it then. And I said, we can get Kevin. Then we'll sit down and we sort of recreate the first episode.
And then interview the artist in residence, talk about their project.
And I was saying, we had the conversation. I said, oh, no, I'm going to tell her that we need a table out in the canoe storage area where all those racks of canoes are.
Oh, yeah.
We'll record in there. No, just for the atmosphere. We have to record in there. Oh, did she say we could do that? No, I'm going to tell her we're going to do that.
That'd be very echoey in there.
It would be.
But when we, for our first episode, do you remember the artist in residence that day?
He was building a mirrored,
like a disco
canoe.
Ball, but
yeah.
It was a canoe.
A disco ball canoe thing.
So all those little tiny 1 centimeter chiclets of mirror, it was an entire canoe and a paddle.
Yep.
I think there's a
and
paddle.
Our friend Johnny Stinson
yes.
was there with his son Hiker in the background.
In the background, they were squealing.
We didn't find that out till a few years later.
Yes.
That was them.
He's like, that was me in the background.
Yeah. So we listened to yeah. But we need to redo episode one because our first episodes, when you listen to them now,
it's like these guys suck.
Crap.
These guys suck.
How did they make it to 10 years? I hope they got better. No. So took a trip through there. Like I said, they had door prizes throughout the day, and I won a paddle sock.
Yep.
Badger paddle paddle sock, which will soon be holding a badger paddle, a happy camper badger paddle,
mm-hmm.
owned by one favorite person of mine. And she's upstairs right now watching TV, I think.
Yep.
When Kevin Callan had his garage sale.
Yes.
I scooped one from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is that for sale? I got to get rid of a lot of stuff. Zink! Yoink.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tracy uses it. It's perfect size for her.
Yeah.
So. It was a great day.
It was.
Shout out to Evan and Julie and their son and the crew at the Canadian Canoe Museum for putting on a great show. Really well done, and can't wait till next year. Traversing.ca, if you want to find out more about Evan. He puts out a newsletter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And talks about just different things going on in the paddling community. And canoemuseum.ca, if you want to find out what's going on at the Canadian Canoe Museum up in Peterborough.
If you've never been to the Canoe Museum, you need to go.
You do. Bring your canoe as well, because mm-hmm. there's a lake out back that you can...
They have a dock.
Yeah, they got docks that you can go paddling around and go take pictures. Look, there's me. Paddling in front of the Canoe Museum.
So there's a park next door where there's a boat ramp you can put in there.
Mm-hmm.
You can also put in at the Canoe Museum itself, although there's no parking down by the water. But there is parking like you know, what is it?
Nearby.
I think it's to the south. It would be like 200, 250 meters to the south. And there's a big parking lot and a park and, and a boat ramp where you can unload and so on. It's a nice little area. There's it's a beautiful area, and you can paddle right in front of the canoe museum.
Right. Perfect. Not sure how I feel about this next one.
Okay.
We got a note from one of our listeners, Marianne, about weather radio station ending. Totally missed this one. Totally missed it.
I thought I had told you about it, because I've been seeing information about it for about a couple weeks now.
Yeah. Nope. Nope. So this is from mid-March. She sent me a note. It says, my husband and I still bring a wind-up solar portable radio with us while on canoe trips in Ontario, Quetico, Temagami, Killarney, Algonquin. While we don't always get the greatest signal, we have always appreciated a 24-hour weather service. It included wind forecasts, which we especially appreciated for those days that we may be windbound. 100%.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have one of those little things. And actually, in our camper, we still have a plug-in weather radio that does that sort of thing. Or used to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. And over the years, I've done a lot of sailing. I've had friends with sailboats, and that's always playing in the background when we're out on the water and so on. It just becomes one of those staple items. And if you have a smaller portable UHF, VHF radio that a lot of paddlers use, they also have a weather channel. You can just listen to the weather forecast. And it's a federal service. It's done by the federal government. It's just this monotonous, monotone dude who sounds like he's the most boring person at a party. But he just kind of consistently reads off
weather
staccato, just the weather, the winds, and
it's just like the information people on the radio station.
Yeah,
she said the only other item we carry to get the weather is our Garmin InReach Mini, though sometimes it would fail to get the forecast if we don't have a clear view of the sky, and it's nice to reserve it for emergencies. Maybe we are just too old school, but we liked having good old reliable weather radio when we could get a signal from a nearby tower. It has always been tradition for us in the backcountry to walk around camp holding up the antenna, usually to our forehead, and listen to the weather report. 100%.
Your head does collect radio signals.
Yep. And you got to put the tinfoil on it or gum wrapper when from like Wrigley's gum or something when in a pinch. That sucks.
Hmm. Yes.
So a cross-Canada radio service that for decades has delivered the latest local forecasts as well as critical alerts about severe weather 24 hours a day is signing off. Has signed off. Listeners being advised to switch to online or cell phone-based services. Environment and Climate Change Canada says on its website that weather radio is permanently disconnected. The announcement says anyone who wants local weather forecasts and alerts should consult the agency's interactive weather map or download its WeatherCan app.
Which is fair. You know, these things can be expensive to maintain, and they don't know how widely, like with internet and IP addresses, they can see who downloads what, who is accessing and stuff. Weather radio, they can't tell. It's just somebody sucking up the radio signal, so it might be pushed out, but nobody's listening, or maybe there's 100,000 people listening.
They don't know. Agency said the radio service, which began operating in 1970s and broadcast within the VHF public service band available on certain radios, has become increasingly challenging to maintain because of climbing costs. The dial-in Good Morning service, where users can phone for a recorded local forecast, ended the same day. Marine forecasts will remain available via the Canadian Coast Guard radio system. To be honest, I think it's not going to affect myself or our operation that much because we rely on the internet service from Starlink, says Rob Argue, the Ottawa-based owner of Eastern Canadian Outfitters, which has two hunting and fishing lodges in Quebec. But the decision is ringing alarm bells for radio amateurs of Canada. Notice all my amateur radio gear here?
Yep.
Whose volunteer help with communication support during disasters.
Yeah.
It said in a statement that weather radio has been particularly important in rural, remote, and northern communities where cellular and internet coverage could be limited or unreliable. Now, I remember when we lived in Petawawa, there was an amateur radio club on base.
Yeah.
And my dad's been an amateur for as long as I can remember. And they had people across in Europe, and on a particular couple of days, they set up the amateur radio operators over there with the ones here, and we could link into the local telephone system via the patch and make telephone calls. So people over there could call their families and have a quick chat with their families on the phone.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all amateur. That's all over radio, yeah. Which now, like, you don't hear about people doing this anymore. Like, I've got one that I don't even have it in my new truck. But there was one that could sit there and I could talk. It's like a CB, but more hoity-toity.
Yeah.
You've actually got to have a license for that. Everybody remembers in Canada that Rogers went down for a day and everybody panicked.
Oh, yes.
Referring to the network outage in 2022. Cellular and satellite communications are very reliable today, but the infrastructure could fail. And if that goes down and there's not much to rely on, for sure. Retired school teacher and farmer Jack Fury, who is 77, died after a twister tore through rural municipality in Alonsa in Manitoba in 2018. His grandson told the Canadian Press at the time that Fury hadn't been able to get any cell service after upgrades were made at the local network. He missed alerts that were sent out before the storm moved through. Weather radio allows the transmission of a tone and coding for specific areas that activate an alarm on the receiving radio, alerting of an incoming important message.
They also, at the top of the hour, always do a, was it eight beeps? And then following eight beeps, it will be the top of the hour.
Yeah.
And so it gives you the exact time.
You get the boop, 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 boop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Transmitters, 230 of them, stretch into Canada's Arctic and from Newfoundland to Vancouver Island. An Environment Canada website says more than 90% of Canadians have been able to access weather radio signal. Since weather radio was introduced, there have been many technological advancements that have permitted us to increase the availability of our weather information services and products. Additionally, cellular service in Canada continues to expand as satellite internet is increasingly enabling remote communities across the country to access information. But the alternatives can be expensive for users. One professor at York University, Disaster and Emergency Planning Program, suggests maintaining weather radio transmitters may not be worth the expense. She says, I start thinking about, you know, when we had rail service to northern communities, which was cut, and we never built that system again until because people prefer to drive and there was not enough demand. Fact of the matter is these things cost and they take up resources. True. Sheena Campbell, a spokeswoman for Alberta's Ministry of Public Safety and Emergency Services, said in an email that urgent public safety alerts will still be sent through Alberta Emergency Alerts, which can interrupt AM, FM radio, television, and mobile devices. But I think that's no different than the Amber Alerts. All of a sudden, everybody's phone in the office starts going nuts.
So now this is a fringe idea, theory, thought, whatever. But, you know, if we have so many satellites surrounding and circling the planet right now, and there's always that thing. It's like, well, what happens if two satellites collide and shatter, and then you get like 15,000 kilometer an hour chunks of metal flying through space, spreading, and then next thing you know, we don't have satellites, and then it's 1,000 years to put another satellite up because there's so much debris. We're going to have to go back to this stuff, right?
I'm prepared.
Right. You have this? Yeah, you have
prepared. This minute. I got like a radio station down here. It's too many radios. Not too many, but. So weather radio's impending shutdown, which was a federal decision, reinforces the importance of personal preparedness and advanced planning. No cellular coverage or AM, FM reception should, anybody with that, should check forecasts before traveling. Let others know travel plans and bring an emergency kit with essential supplies. Argue says Meanwhile, the said that guides with his outfitting business check Environment Canada or Weather Network forecasts every day. They do that via Starlink when in remote locations, but don't get alerts when they're away from base camps. So, yeah, you can get a good setup at base camp, but if you're out for the day and a freak storm's coming in or something like that. I did that going into Opeongo on a solo canoe trip one year. It checked the weather. It was supposed to be fantastic. It was going to be beautiful weather. I was looking forward to it. And then a massive ice storm came in.
Oh, yeah.
I had to leave early.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like everything was slippery. When I got back to the dock where my truck was, I stood up and the front of my chest is like a
mold.
It was like a mold of ice
had
come off because the freezing rain had just molded this ice chest piece like a suit of armor sort of thing. And I stopped in the front gate and I said, I checked my weather. I checked everything. And she goes, we had no clue this was coming. So, yeah. Like a lot of people probably who are used to being out in remote locations, you just keep an eye on the sky and pay attention to drops in temperature and things like that. I think a lot of people living in those environments know what to look for sometimes.
So there are technological steps that are happening right now as we speak where some of the newer iPhones are going to have satellite capability.
Yep.
And so currently we can rely on Starlink for user enabled uploads for remote satellite.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, just for independence and reliability, Europe is creating their own system like Starlink, as Canada is as well. So Canada is going to put up I can't remember what year, but I think they said 2030, they're going to have a satellite flying so that we have our own homegrown type of Starlink internet. And so Canada's putting that up there. They're going to start with one satellite and end up with a few. And Europe is doing the same thing. So there are advancements to enable us to very remote find a satellite uplink and download weather or other critical information that we may need at a moment's notice. But again, it's going to be heavily dependent on technology. It's always good to learn clouds, learn weather patterns, red sky in morning, sailor take warning, right, type thing.
Yep.
So there's a lot of learning we can do to advance our own knowledge about what's happening when we're out camping, how to predict incoming storms and predict that dark cloud on the horizon. Is it coming towards us? Is it going tangentially across from us or whatever? It's you need to educate yourself so that you're not heavily dependent on technology.
Yeah. When I look out in the morning, if the ground is wet, I know it's raining.
Ooh, it must be raining today. It's wet.
It must be raining. Everything is wet. But I put my hand out and it gets wet. I know it's raining.
Like the typical sign you see at a lot of resorts. If the stone hanging from the string is hanging limp, then it's the weather is fine. If it's hanging horizontally, the winds are very high. If the rock is missing, then there's a tornado.
Thanks for the note, Marianne. Totally missed that one. Apparently, Derek,
I knew about it,
but just, didn't think I should know.
I didn't tell you.
Everybody's just keeping me in the dark, feeding me. Yeah, it's just like I'm a mushroom something. So when the zombie apocalypse happens, you don't touch my radio. And that big radio, the heat that comes off of that with all the tubes.
It'll warm the house.
Well, it's from World War II, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're listening to radio stations or whatever around the world, you can just warm yourself on that. Yeah.
I had one of those shortwave radios with the tubes. I was so excited. An old friend back in New Brunswick gave it to me, and it had all the tubes, and it worked. It was battery operated. It worked. So you could pick up all these high frequency radio signals, so you can talk to people. But this one was just listen only. You couldn't broadcast. But I left it at my brother's house, and I recently said, hey, Tony, I need to get that radio back from you. Oh, I threw that away. You son of a...
And these are museum pieces now.
Well, yeah, anything with tubes in it and stuff, it's museum quality. And he says, well, I didn't think you wanted it. It's like, you could have asked.
Right?
That was an antique. It's like 50, 80 years old. It's like really old. It would have been, I think it was from the 50s. So 75 years old. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the 50s, did you watch the rocket, Artemis 2, take off and land?
I didn't see it take off, but I saw the landing. I saw the splashdown.
You know what that means? getting back into space.
What?
We're just that much closer to paddling on other planets.
Okay.
That's all I know. We talked about that on one of our shows, too.
We did.
Yeah, we're going to be paddling on another planet. When probably not us.
No.
Unless they find some sort of, you know, you can live for 300 years.
Everybody's pushing back dates. Like, everything is like, we were unreasonable in our predictions of the future. Like, Musk is already saying that, we're not making it to Mars anytime soon.
So. Not with an attitude like that.
I know.
And no one wants you on Mars anyway.
But we are going back to the moon.
Well, they just were there. They circled right around. They did a little drive-by.
What I'm saying is that they're going to put a base on the moon. Hmm. What is it? 2029, 2030, they're going to bring the ISS back in. It's going to burn up in orbit because it's getting old and clunky. It's got, I think they said it's got 47 different leaks from micrometeoroids that have been hitting the shell. And so it's hitting a period in its life where they've already paid the money to bring the ISS down. It's Musk is going to do it with his SpaceX.
I don't know why they bring it down. Just zip it out into somewhere.
Well,
take up a rocket, put it on there, and let it just take it towards the sun or something. So, or just pass the out of our solar system.
Well, I don't know if you could guarantee that it's going to leave properly. Like,
as long as it doesn't hit the Earth, who cares?
So that's the thing. Like, there's some of these old Atlas rockets that parts and pieces, they tracked a few about 4 years ago. It's like, this is this thing. Where's this from? They tracked it back and they said, that was put up in space in the 60s. And it came back, did a fly. The old rocket body did a flyby like 4 years ago. It almost hit Earth.
Really?
Yeah, it came back. It's been floating in orbit around the sun, and it came back.
Since the 50s, 60s?
Yes.
So in another...
It's going to come back again in another 40,
maybe 50
we'll
years. Hit it this time. Yeah.
Anyways, it's much safer to deorbit something than try and... If it screws up and you put it into higher orbit, then you don't know where it's going to crash in. Next thing you know, you got the ISS landing on the CN Tower and... Controlled reentry. 99% of it burns up.
What a waste. I say just shoot it into space. Maybe an alien will find
maybe
it.
Maybe somebody can use it.
Right?
Homeless somebody people out there will live in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Homeless aliens will live in it.
See? Could happen. And then they'll come circling around, smash right into Earth.
Yeah.
Clear Creek down in Colorado. Rafting owners and state agencies say this year's season on Clear Creek might be challenging with extreme low snowpack. And it's funny when you're listening to different reports about the snowpack and different rafting areas across the country.
Points. It depends on where you're talking because some areas had an early melt, so that early melt is now gone and wasted, and so it's not going to be as usable for farming and so on, and other ones have heavy snowpack that are gonna, like, they're talking about Lake Mead, it might go up this year because of the snowpack, but
It depends on which area you're talking you're listening to. It's over the board. It says it will happen, and new rafts drawing shallow water will help extend a limited season. Rafting season across Colorado and specifically in Clear Creek County is a multi-million dollar industry with exponential monetary advantages to local economies considering local restaurants, shopping, and lodging. So the longer you can keep the season going, the more money the local businesses make. According to statistics from the Colorado River Outfitters Association, a trade association representing approximately 45 licensed professional river rafting outfitters, the economic impact of rafting in Colorado in 2024 resulted in $81.7 million in direct spending and an overall monetary impact of $209 million for the state.
That's a lot of bucks. That's a lot of tourism dollars.
That's a good rafting season.
Yeah, so that puts food on people's tables and pays people mortgages and puts kids through school.
Bingo. However, the mountain snowpack that feeds Clear Creek is at a historic low for this time of year, according to the forecasters from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Boulder, the NOAA. It's been tracking the dry conditions in the Front Range and Clear Creek County from the Weather Service offices in Boulder. Confirms that it's an unusual and dry pattern for mountain communities. CROA Executive Director Dave Coslow reinforced the challenges rafting outfitters will face in this dry season. He says, I think the season will be fine. Now, how long it will go, I don't know, but we won't have the high water that we do in some years. That's almost guaranteed. Nonetheless, owners of two major rafting outfitters on Clear Creek remain defiantly optimistic about the season of rafting on the creek. Colorado Adventure Center owner Ethan Castro says there are going to be a lot of sunny days on the river. It's not going to be as high or long, but we are still going to have a lot of fun. Liquid Descent owner Alan Blado says he's equally a positive. He says, I'm optimistic. I think we're going to provide people with an awesome experience. The river can provide a great experience at low water, high water, or mid water. Operates depends on what you're going for.
Yeah, right? So there's a lot of excitement in high water.
Yeah.
Then there's the relative safety of normal water levels, which mm-hmm. a lot of people maybe in spring run off. They're just like, oh, I'm not doing that. That's scary.
Right.
And then low water, you got a lot of bumping and grinding, and it's even more safer.
Mm-hmm. His guys will be using new rafts specifically made for shallower conditions this year. Says this is the game changer. They're a company called Gumotex. Yeah, because we were trying to figure that one out, weren't we?
We Googled
Gumotex.
It.
And a few of our outfitters have bought them after an outfitter tried them last year and was able to go weeks longer than the rest of us.
Which is great. In shallow water conditions, if you have a shallow draft raft.
Mm-hmm. The raft, according to outfitters, is designed to draw shallower on the water, allowing more people per raft in water running at lower cubic feet per second rate. They're specifically designed for the type of conditions Clear Creek is going to give us. Colorado Adventure Center owner Castro agreed, we heard reports of them performing really well last year, so we ended up investing in many of them. What we've been told and what we expect is them running down to 60 CFS, which, based on history, extends the season another 2 to 4 weeks.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of into money for the local economy. In a way, it's going to save the season to some degree. Optimism in Mother Nature and confidence in overcoming shallow obstacles will be the key this season, outfitters say. They are confident it will not disappoint. It will be a good year for family floating, and if we do get moisture in the next few weeks, which we think we will, it will enhance the rafting season.
That could be a game changer. Like the initial investment, it's going to be the bottom line is going to be a bit tighter because they had to buy a bunch of new rafts.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long run, with an extended season where they can go like 2 to 4 weeks later at the end of the season and stay open that much longer. So you see a lot of guides, the owners are going to make a little bit more money a little bit later in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps the business going and puts yeah. more food on people's plates.
Gumotex inflatable boats. They have inflatable canoes that range from 1,400 to 2,100 U.S. Inflatable open-top kayaks and others that look like regular kayaks. So it's like they're enclosed.
Yes.
$700 to $2,800 range. Rafts are $2,000 to $8,100 U.S. Range. And they have a fishing kayak, which is $1,850.
Hmm.
Their closed kayak, the ones that look like regular kayak, those ones look pretty cool.
Oh, but they're inflatable. Yeah. Closed inflatable yep. kayak. Yep. I haven't seen the pictures of it.
Yep. Pulsar rafts are sought after by rafting operators, sports centers, water sports clubs, and also for raft racing. Fast and rigid hull combined with a self-bailing inflatable bottom provides exceptional stability, very fast draining in rapids. Pulsar rafts have been chosen several times as the official race boats for the European Championships, Italy 2010, Slovakia 2014, Turkey 2015, Bulgaria 2015, Italy 2016, Slovenia 2016, and the Czech Republic 2023. Also have official race boat for the 2003 World Championships that took place in the Czech Republic on the Vltava River. The Pulsar rafts are the big expensive ones.
Yes.
That you're going to see these rafting companies use. Every Gummatex boat is made from our patented material, Nitrilon. Lighter, more durable, and built to last, not PVC. So the two big ones are the Pulsar 450, which is 130.2 pounds, holds 9 people. And the Pulsar 560, 165.3 pounds. So this isn't something you're going to be toting on a pack trip.
These are big suckers. Several people have to carry these.
Yeah, holds 9 to 12 people, 18 feet 5 inch length, 6 feet 11 inches wide.
It's a big boat.
Packed, it's 39 by 28 by 20. So it does pack down pretty decent. Self-bailing bottom, no slip seat surface, foot straps, 4 carrying handles, safety rope around the perimeter of the boat, D-rings inside the raft for attaching gear, stainless steel bow handles, 2 thwarts, push-push valves, push-push and pressure release valve wrench, repair kits, transport bags. That's what comes with these rafts. So what is Nitrilon? When you'd think you're nitrile, like the nitrile gloves like and nitrile stuff gloves, like that, right? When choosing an inflatable kayak or canoe, design and shape matter, but construction matters just as much. At Gummatex, every boat is built using our patented Nitrilon composite technology, developed over more than 70 years of in-house manufacturing expertise. This advanced construction system is what allows our boats to remain lightweight, resilient, and ready for years of paddling. Whether you're exploring calm lakes, navigating rocky rivers, or heading out on coastal waters, Nitrilon forms the foundation behind models like the Seashine, Rush 2, Baraka, and Safari 330 boats. Nitrilon is a proprietary composite developed and manufactured in-house at Gummatex. It consists of a high-strength polyester fabric core, coating layers based on synthetic and natural rubber, and a carefully controlled bonding and finishing process. Textile base provides structural stability and tensile strength. The rubber-based surface layers ensure air tightness, flexibility, and resistance to external wear, like rocks, for instance.
Yes.
Critically, Nitrilon contains no toxic PVCs or plasticizers, making a cleaner choice for paddlers who care about the waters they explore. Technology has been refined since 1956 through decades of in-house development and real-world paddling feedback from over 100,000 customers worldwide. Many inflatable boats on the market rely on PVC-based fabrics. Nitrilon was developed with a different philosophy. One focused on flexibility, surface resilience, and long-term usability without compromising environmental responsibility. Its layered textile and rubber structure is engineered to withstand abrasion, maintain flexibility across temperature changes, support consistent air tension, and deliver dependable use season after season. For paddlers, that translates into equipment built for real-world conditions, not just showroom specifications. So when it says it's going to bounce off that rock, it's going to bounce off that rock and not rip open. One of the key strengths of Nitrilon is its balanced strength-to-weight profile. Because of its composite construction, Gummatex inflatable kayaks and canoes remain easy to transport and pack without sacrificing structural integrity. You can carry them in a car, tow them behind a bike, or check them on an airplane.
There you go.
Yeah, like I say, some of these look pretty cool, and they have a lot of different kayaks and canoes that you can choose from.
Yeah, not just rafts, kayaks, canoes, inflatables, right?
Yep.
So this is, and it's very thin, it makes it pack small. Mm-hmm. It's lightweight. It's easy to use for the general consumer. It's fantastic.
Touring designs like Seashine offer impressive rigidity while remaining practical to carry. Whitewater-ready models like Safari 330 are built to handle contact with rocks and shallow riverbeds. And expedition-capable canoes such as the Baraka combine toughness and portability for longer trips. So if you want to find more about the Gummatex boats, go to Gummotex, G-U-M-O-T-E-X, boats.com, and you can check out all their models there and see the pricing and get more information on them. But yeah, there's some pretty cool looking boats there, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
And realistically, they're not exorbitantly priced. I mean, unless you're trying to get the top of the line raft for 12 people, which, you know, no, I'm not taking 12 of my closest friends. Yeah, I can just go buy your own.
I don't have that many friends.
Right? Well, I wasn't going to say anything. Last one I got here, I was looking to do a trip a couple years back, heading south, and it got kiboshed, unfortunately. But this was actually one of the routes I was going to...
Oh,
I
you
saw
were?
It. Yeah, this is one of the places I was going to go, and I saw it there, and I'm like, oh, well, it's still there.
Mm-hmm. Was this one the trip that was interrupted by COVID?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't necessarily have to leave the city limits of Roanoke, Virginia to find nature, wildlife, and views of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Just grab a kayak, canoe, tube, or stand-up paddleboard and head on over to the Roanoke River Blue Way. Blue Way is a 45-mile section of the Roanoke River featuring multiple access points for floating and fishing. If you're lucky, you may hook a red-eye, bluegill, smallmouth bass, or trout. Mm-hmm. Starting in eastern Montgomery Park in Elliston, Virginia, the recreational water trail weaves through Salem and Roanoke and extends into Smith Mountain Lake. Stretches of the float feel quite secluded and peaceful, while others pass parks and restaurants. I like the connection, and always good to be reminded of the wild in the urban, says Amanda McGee, Director of Community Development for the Roanoke Valley Allegheny Regional Commission. Given the number of access points along the Blue Way, 18 and counting, you can design your adventure to suit your interests, location, and time constraints. Although you can certainly complete the entire route, McGee shares that most people opt to tackle shorter segments, beginning or ending their float in either Roanoke or neighboring Salem. Our urban section is very popular. Paddlers and floaters can hop out of the river, get food and drinks or ice cream, and jump right back in. That's nice. Up my alley right there. There's look at that guy out there getting exercise with that box of donuts.
Is he eating donuts and an ice cream at the same time?
Who's paddling this thing? If you're not the biggest fan of water-based travel, you can still take in the Roanoke Valley scenery from the Roanoke River Greenway, which runs right alongside the Blue Way for about 20 miles. Great option for walking or bicycle shuttle for those looking for extra exercise. Or two of you are heading down. One wants to go on a bike ride. One wants to go on a canoe trip.
You wave at each other.
You wave at each other as you float on by. Right? It's perfect. There's no right way to enjoy the Roanoke River Blue Way, but McGee does have a few pointers on where to launch your paddle or float. If you're new to kayaking, I recommend the stretch from Rotary Park to Bridge Street. It's a floatable even when water levels are low. There are a few interesting water features, but nothing too technical, and it's a shorter stretch. A local outfitter, Roanoke Mountain Adventures, offers rentals and a shuttle to Rotary Park. Since they're located right off the river in Wasina, you can float all the way back to their shop. Back in Wasina, end the day with a drink from Wasina City Tap Room and Grill and dinner at Bloom. Or fuel your float with a sweet treat from Kind Baking Company in the morning.
Well, they're really
all
pushing.
Right.
Support the locals.
All right, we're going to the Blue Way, and we're going to hit up the old Kind Baking Company.
The bakery in the morning.
And the afternoon.
Apple fritters. And then
the evening. Yeah. Midnight snack. Second breakfast. ready to ramp up the intensity, keep moving east towards Class 2 Rapids. The Roanoke River Gorge is a beautiful section full of whitewater features, beginning at Blue Ridge Parkway and continuing down through the Roanoke County's Explore Park. As you're meandering along the river, keep an eye out for the locals. The Roanoke River is home to a wide variety of wildlife, including great blue herons, migratory Canadian geese, ducks, and ospreys. You may also see some interesting travelers in the winter months, like hooded mergansers.
Oh, nice.
While the Roanoke River Blue Way is already a dream destination for residents and visitors who'd like to stay active, there's even more to come. But wait, now how much
would
you pay?
But wait, there's more.
The city of Roanoke received money to develop phase one of the planned in-river kayak park, which includes improvements at Memorial Bridge, Wasina Park, and the Wasina Park Low Water Bridge. We're super excited to see these facilities go in, says McGee. Construction will continue through this summer in some places, but I can't wait to try out what has already been completed.
That sounds awesome. So would you, if you had done this back in, what was it going to be, 2020 or 2021?
21, I think it was, yeah.
So if you had done it, were you going to do the whole 45-mile water trail?
No, I was just going to do a couple of sections of it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was going to be one of those trips where I do a section here and then drive for, you know, a few hours.
So a bunch of hit-and-runs type thing.
Yeah, yeah, just a bunch of hit-and-runs all the way south. Hopefully, maybe at one point hitting Florida.
Yeah.
And then back up. Uh-huh. Like 2 days sort of mm-hmm. thing. So no, and that's sort of what we're going to do is I still have Moab area on my radar.
Oh, yes.
To go out there yeah. and do that. So, but it was supposed to be a south trip just like that west trip was supposed to be. So all the really cool trips keep getting kiboshed by
things. I know.
So yeah, if you're down Virginia way in Roanoke, hit up the water trail and check it out. Mm-hmm. Scenery there is absolutely stunning, too.
Oh, yes.
The last thing I have here is the last couple lists of outdoor shows.
Which we're coming quickly to the end of.
Right? Ottawa Outdoor Adventure Travel Show, April 25th, 26th. Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking. Lots of outdoor gear and equipment and paddlecraft. AdventureOttawa.ca for more info. And, of course, the three lock and paddles are coming up in July and August. Lachine Canal in Montreal, Saturday, July 11th. Peterborough Lift Lock, Saturday, July 18th. Hartswell Lock in Ottawa on Saturday, August 15th. Go to parks.canada.ca for more info, and we'll probably see you at one, two, or all three of those.
And I believe all of the spring flood canoe things like the Raisin River, the Ganaraska, and so on, they happened last weekend.
Float your fanny on the Gani. We were sitting on our butts in the canoe symposium while that was happening.
Yeah. Well, that would have been a good day for it. It would have been cold for people, but it was sunny.
Well, that would be a them problem, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
You got anything else?
I do not. I'd like to hear from people who did either the Raisin River or the Ganaraska. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say about your event and how it ran for you guys.
Because the Raisin River was supposed to be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you are listening to this on Thursday...
It worked!
Yes, I'm a genius! If you were not able to listen to this on Thursday because of problems...
We're apologizing.
I'm not as big a genius as I thought.
We apologize, and we're working on it.
It's Derek's fault.
Yes, it's always Derek's fault.
Derek did it. Yeah, when all else fails. There's one finger to point, and it's pointing right at Derek. if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Oh, if our podcast goes down, like, from the podcast places, you can always get into YouTube because it has nothing to do with our website.
Oh, there we go.
Upload that independently. So if for some reason something happens, you can still listen to it on YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com. And you can stream or download all our episodes there. And any new episodes are on the front page of our new website.
Yes.
And there's a play button bar there, so you can actually play it from our front page.
Yeah, right from the webpage.
Right from the webpage. And, lots of new little things going on that website. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.